Hey there. Welcome to the Speak and Flow podcast. I am so glad you're here. This show is for leaders who care. Leaders who know that when things get messy, the way we communicate makes all the difference. Every week I sit down with incredible guests, founders, VPs, rising stars, to unpack real moments of today where communication matters. We talk about what works, what doesn't, and how you can lead conversations that create trust, movement, and momentum. Because in uncertain times like today, your words have weight. Let's use them well. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Speak and Flow podcast, the podcast where we slow things down just a bit to help you communicate with more clarity, strategy, and purpose. Today, we are going to talk about how to communicate and be a leader in those high-pressured moments. Joining me is a leader. He's the board of directors of At the Home More Project, advisor for GLG. He's a founding member of Open Water Group. He advises early stage startups through Series C's, go-to-market strategies, product marketing, demand generation, and customer experience. He turns complex ideas into strategies that drive measurable growth. Welcome to the podcast, Keith Myers.
Thank you so much, Melinda. It's great to be here. I appreciate you having me on the show.
I am so glad. I'm so glad you're here, and I can't wait to dive in. And so the first question I'm going to start off with is, there is a busy leader right now who has stopped to listen to this podcast. And if this person takes everything into account that you're about to tell them and implements them, what do you hope would change in his or her, this person's life?
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, as a leader, we've got a lot of stuff on our minds and we think about a lot of things all at the same time, right? And one of the things that would be awesome if somebody took away from this discussion is how to get over that fear factor, right? How to get over the fear that comes in when something happens, or you might have a crisis, or when you don't know what to say, or you feel nervous, right? Like, how do you get over that and kind of step into your power as a leader?
Yeah. That is, I mean, as a founder, advisor, you've been through it all. Can you share an experience where you felt like it was one of those critical moments where you just really had to make a decision to push through fear?
That's a good one.
Perhaps maybe when you've, oh, actually, before we step into that, yeah. I would like for you to share with the audience more about what you do and what excites you today. So that gives them context about the amazing person that you are and how much experience you really have.
Yeah, definitely. You touched on it a little bit. So, you know, earlier in my career, I spent a lot of time at big corporations. I learned a ton about things like branding, things like how to bring a product to market, how to start something from scratch, all those things. Switched over to more startups. I was working at startups. I had my own startup as a founder. And then more recently have been working with other startups and really more recently have been working as an advisor to early stage through Series C, kind of fintech in general, mostly in that vertical, right, in fintech. And what I like to do, and what I see, is come into an organization where they're struggling a little bit with, like, we've tried out a lot of things, some things work, some things don't. How do we pull that together into like an official strategy, both from a business standpoint as well as a marketing standpoint?
And so what are the challenges that you see people having with that?
I think it's very easy to get down in the weeds, right? Mm-hmm. When you're a founder or a leader, and it could also be a leader at a bigger organization where you're over a piece of that organization, right? But it's very easy to get wrapped up in the weeds and kind of get into the day-to-day tactical things that you need to work on and not take a step back and kind of say, okay, strategically, what do we really want to accomplish? What do we need to do? It's like, not just keep the lights on, right? But actually, how do we make a difference? How do we really make an impact with what we're doing? If it's a business, how do we grow the business to a certain size that we want to get to and not just kind of rest on our laurels and kind of and cruise on, right? Mm-hmm. And most companies want to eventually get to a bigger size, right, and get to a certain level of success. And you know, that's one of the things that kind of taking a step back and thinking a bit more strategically, I think helps people with.
Yeah. Can you share a moment when you've experienced that? Like, take us back into your thought process and what was happening when you were in the weeds.
Yeah, I can. When I was the founder, one of the founders of In Command, early on, we thought that we had everything figured out, of course, right?
Of course.
And and we did have some things figured out, to be fair. But we thought we would get funding, for example, very early. We had some people promise us that they would come in and fund us. And to make a long story short, they didn't. And that was very early on. And then we struggled a bit because we're like, wait, our whole premise was built on, putting together this funding and we don't have it. And so we had to really bite the bullet and take a step back and say, well, if we need to go from scratch and actually go out there and raise money the traditional way that startups do with, early stage funders like angel investors or even smaller VCs, how are we going to do that? And we kind of had to really build all of that out. And it was a cool place to be, right? But it took a lot longer than we thought. But the interesting thing was once we got that first funder in, then it was like a floodgate because all of a sudden we got that validation. Okay, somebody believes in you. Somebody's willing to actually give you money. And then all of a sudden, all these other people were like, okay, now I'm in. But they were kind of sitting in the sidelines waiting, because they didn't want to be the first one to take the biggest risk. And then finally somebody did, and then we had people come in. And then it was great. Then we had enough money to kind of launch the company, do what we needed to do to get to a certain phase, and also kind of build things out to where we needed it to go.
And did you have moments at that time where you just had to, someone would ask you a question, or, and you just had to, you had that stomach, that knot in your stomach? There's high pressured moments, I'm sure, throughout that whole time. Can you tell me how you were able to actually navigate those?
Oh yeah, definitely. So I think every company that goes through kind of fundraising, usually you have, tactically you have a pitch deck, right? You go out, you're pitching for money, and very often you get feedback after that pitch deck. Sometimes people might move to the next stage of potentially funding you. Sometimes they're extremely critical of what you present. And myself personally, I like to say that I'm a extroverted introvert. So I'm not naturally super extroverted, right? I've kind of learned how to become more extroverted and actually be able to talk to people or whatever. But no doubt when I'm out there, if I have to do a pitch, for example, or I have to be in front of a large group of people, I get very nervous and I have to go through a little bit of a process to kind of handle that, right? But for me, the biggest thing is know the subject matter that you're talking about, right? Practice, feel comfortable with that. And then when you're out there actually pitching, it's a lot easier and a lot more difficult to become nervous, right? And to feel that you can't do that. But the other thing is, I think I've heard other people on some of your other guests talk about this, is in that same process, listen to what people say to you, right? Like actually have an interaction. It's not just you emoting and telling people what to do or giving them information. It's like as much as possible, have it as a two-way conversation. It makes you feel more confident and comfortable, and gives other people a reason to attach to the content that you're sharing.
Engage with them so that they're like feeling attached and
Yeah.
connected to the content. And well,
Right.
congratulations. I mean, how many times did you have to pitch before you got the
Oh
funding?
my God. Somebody asked me that the other day. I think
Really?
probably over 100 for sure.
What?
Oh
Like you
yeah.
said, so people were watching in the sideline for over 100 times that you did this.
yeah.
Oh, how
Yeah, and
powerful.
it's not just me, right? We had multiple people that of founders where we were all out, pitching. Actually, our CEO probably pitched the most times, but I also was out there pitching. And if you put all those together, for sure, over 200 pitches, right? To VCs, to individual funders, to awards, all different things where we were trying to get our name out there. But it's all part of it, right? You kind of
How
have
long did that take?
to get our first money in the door was probably close to a year from when we started doing it. And then once we got that first money, like I mentioned, then it was pretty fast. Then within about 6 months, we got the majority of the money that we raised in the door.
And what did you learn along that way, along the way of that whole time?
It's interesting. I think the biggest thing we learned was that there was a there there in what we had as a business, right? Whenever you launch a business, you're like, is this real? Like, is this really something that can make money and that people are going to be interested in? And one of the things that I learned was to believe in what you know you're launching is valid, right? Once you get it out there, I mean, for us, for example, once we got it out there and actually brought the product to market and people could actually, so our, just
What
to give
was
a
it?
background, yeah, our product was alternate investment that you could invest online on your own. You had to be an accredited investor, but you could come in and what we did was we fractionalized home mortgages, so mortgage loans. So people could buy as could invest in as little as $100 across many different loans to kind of diversify their risk. So in essence, you're kind of putting together your own pool of investments and customizing it however you wanted to do that. When we put that out live and actually put it on the market, we sold out like almost instantaneously. So we realized, okay, there is a there. People are really interested in this product, right? They're really interested in what we offer, which was something that was less risky, but with a decent return, kind of a cash alternative. And most of us have cash. We put it into our bank account and it makes zero or very little percent interest. So this was a way, if you have extra cash that you're not still using, to lock it away for a little bit of time, kind of like a CD, but with a much higher, interest rate. So that
Did
was
it
the
take a
biggest thing.
while to work out how to pitch it, like how to say it quickly so that people
Yeah.
understood it? Yeah, turning
It
complex ideas
did.
into strategies that drive growth. How
It
many years?
did. Like it's funny that you say that. Recently I was looking through all the documentation that we had. I was looking back some of our very early pitch decks. I'm like, how did anybody even understand what we were doing? It was so convoluted and so complicated and so long, like you said. And then when you break it down to its core essence, sometimes less is more, right? Sometimes sharing too much, like people don't want to know about the back end of what you're offering. People don't want to know, like, how does, like, for example, with that, how does fractionalization work? They're like, I don't care. I just want to invest in your, what you're offering. Or as an investor, they're like, just give me the problem that you're solving, why you guys are good at it, and why you're the right ones to do it. That's all I want to know, right? They don't want to know any of the detail behind the scenes. And that's hard because you're proud of it. You're
It's
like,
really
we built
hard.
all this stuff, but no, they don't. Too much
And
sometimes
sometimes a
can.
part of what you do is what makes you unique, what makes you different. So then it's that balance.
Yeah, exactly right.
Because then, because if you just keep it at the high level, you sound like everybody else too. What's the problem I solve? We went.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
It's very quite. It's quite interesting. That's why us entrepreneurs are continue to keep going
Yeah.
because it is challenging to.
That's what sucks people in though, when you sort of either have your, if you're a founder or if you are working with startups, yes, it's complicated and difficult, but at the same time, it's super rewarding, right? So the way I say it, I like to like characterize it is like, very often when you work at a full-time job or you have a career, it kind of goes like this. You have ups and downs, but it kind of goes like this. A startup on a daily basis, you're spiking up and then the next minute you're like, oh my God, why am I doing this? Oh my God, this is so exciting. We're gonna kick butt. No, it's terrible. We're never, it's never gonna work, And it's crazy, but you kind of get addicted to
You can't get addicted to it. You can't
excitement,
get. I mean, we've already come so far and we haven't broken yet. So it's just, but then the next day it feels like, okay, I really want to give up.
Exactly. Right.
Oh
And
my
but you know,
gosh.
like you're talking about attaching that to communication, you can't show that on the outside. You kind of always have to be up about it and kind of always be pretty even keeled about what's happening. Like everything's, great, but sometimes in the back you're not feeling that way. So you have to kind of psych yourself up to be, positive about that.
No, I really appreciate you bringing that into the communication realm because when I think about communication, I think about it's actually also an external a representation of how we feel on the inside. And so for me, I have the belief that when we say something, our words actually translate to action. Like every word, whether we're bringing people together, whether we're getting influenced by them to buy something or whatever words we're using, we're like eroding trust. Like it's, yeah, so we're creating some type of action
That's
intentionally.
right.
And so like it's really important to be thoughtful and careful and purposeful with our words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the things that just popped in my head as you were talking about that, the other thing that I think is really key is consistency, right?
Yes.
So whoever it is, whether it's you speaking about something about the company, your coworker, somebody that invested in you, somebody seeing your website. So like even from a marketing perspective, right? Marketing is just a broader communication than a one-on-one communication. So all of those things, whether it's a salesperson talking one-on-one or marketing talking to thousands of people that are seeing some communication, all those things need to kind of family together because they all support each other, right? And to me, that's like a really, really important thing about communication or even communication style is that if you're out there talking about the company, make sure that you're following, I guess, kind of the branding and the communication style that has been set up for the company, so you're not working at cross purposes, right? Because that can happen too really easily.
Yeah. Well, how does a company continue the conversation and consistent communication when strategies are changing? Goals are changing. How would a leader continue to when the person, the leader itself, have you ever experienced it when you don't even know where you're going?
Yeah, it's really tough, right? Because
Yeah.
different people have different reasons that they're in a specific role at a company, for example, right? And maybe what has changed with the company they feel they need to be convinced is going to support what they're being asked to do. So I'll give you an example, right? There might be a change in branding or maybe a change in the voice that the company is using to talk about. So I've been at companies, for example, where the product has expanded dramatically, but then the way the companies talk about us it about itself is much narrower.
Yes.
And so you need to kind of have everybody in the company understand what does that broadening mean. But as an example, for a salesperson, right? Typically a salesperson has had success talking about the company in a certain way. And it's very scary and difficult for them to say, okay, I need to give that up, something that has made the company money and more importantly made me money because sales is always making money from the sales that they bring in, right? And so for you to go in and say, okay, no, sorry, we don't want you to talk about the company that way anymore, you have to change it up, right? It takes some time for them to be comfortable for that, but I think some of it is clearly communicating the why of why it changed and why you can't necessarily move forward in the way that you have. And just realizing as a communicator that sometimes that's going to take a while. It's probably not going to be instantaneous for somebody like a salesperson to say, "Oh yeah, great, I'm going to drop everything and I'm going to talk about it differently," because they've become comfortable with a certain style and type of
Yes.
communication. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's really fascinating how we have to continue like evolve, like continue to remind and evolve and repeat and be consistent and bring everybody else along together.
That's right.
And sometimes people, like you said, they're not going to be on board right away because they're not comfortable.
Yeah. And I think it's the job of a leader, but particularly like let's say a main leader of a company, like a CEO, to be that cheerleader, right? And explain the why in an exciting way, like almost like a mentor to the rest of the company. So everybody can gel and move in that direction, right? If it doesn't happen that way, and maybe a lower level person, like let's say a marketing manager or something's developing it, but it doesn't flow all the way up to the CEO and doesn't communicate down to the rest of the company, that can be kind of a little bit of a disaster, right? Because it,
Which, yeah, because keep going, sorry.
I was gonna say, it's a little bit of a disaster because it's not matching, right? The
Yes.
one part of the organization might be saying something one way, which is maybe more progressive, but the highest levels haven't bought off on that sometimes. That can be really difficult because then it's going to be fragmented and people in other groups may not follow what marketing, for example, is saying because the CEO isn't on board with it. So it's important that it comes from the top down, I guess, is the important for that type of situation. Yeah.
Have you worked with a company where they understand it, but maybe the why, like what is a powerful why? I think sometimes when you ask them to say why, they might be why.
Yeah.
Can you share some examples where
Yeah.
do founders get it nowadays? Maybe more do so now
I think
than
they do because I
before.
think, yeah, especially if they've gotten to a certain level, they've obviously found something that's clicked with their customer base, right? So yes, they do get it to a certain point. And usually if they've brought in some form of funding, right? A funder, especially if you get to the VC level of funding, they're going to require a certain level of communication and simplicity of communication that they can understand and that they can see, excuse me, can grow into, a bigger business that's going to make their investment worthwhile.
Interesting. Is it a template? Do they usually want you to type it out in a template, or how do you present this information?
There is kind of a template for pitching. The template is very much around, like I kind of mentioned, having what's the problem? What's the main problem that you're solving? How are you solving it? Right. And then why are you the right person to bring it to market? Like, what's so great about you or your team? Like, what's unique about the team that you're bringing to market? That's a little bit earlier stage. Once you get a little bit farther along, they're going to want to see more detail around what was your traction, how much revenue are you bringing in, what's your revenue growth projection, how are you going to do that, why are you going to do that, if you're asking for money, exactly how are you going to be using all that money, right? Like if you're, because some nowadays, companies are bringing in millions of dollars, if not a lot more than that, and it's like, okay, well, how do you break that down? We don't just want to bring it in for you to try stuff out and throw it around. Like, exactly what are you going to spend that money on, and how is that going to lead to success?
So fascinating. I mean, it's the simplest like statements and questions to answer, but they're so difficult to answer.
They're really difficult. They're really difficult, especially because the far, in that situation, the far you, farther you're looking forward, the more it's conjecture, right? There's it's not scientific that in 5 years this is what things are going to look like. You're
No, especially nowadays, right?
guessing. Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty in the world right nowadays, so
Wow, it's so great. Thank you so much. I think that, I'm really fascinated by all the different ventures, boards that you're on. Have you had one where you really had to work on their marketing and positioning? Like, is there one that stands out that you'd like to share?
I mean, the most interesting for me, just because it's very topical and recent, is the Homer Project, right? Which is a still relatively small nonprofit focused on homelessness in California. We've had a lot of traction in the past 6 months to a year. We've gotten a significant amount of fundraising, and we've had some successes with kind of our early product. So, what's been interesting with that is, my background is for profit. My background is not nonprofit, although I've had a little bit of nonprofit experience, but generally for profit. And bringing that for profit mentality into a nonprofit, I think, is something that really works well, right? Because sometimes nonprofits get bogged down in the fact that they're a nonprofit and they need, they're getting donor money, and it's a different way of thinking. But if you look at it, that's your revenue, right? That's the money, that's the fundraising that you're bringing in to run the organization. Look at it the same as you would a for-profit. You don't want to waste money. You want to be careful about what you spend the money on. You want to be strategic about where you put the money. It's exact same as a for-profit.
That's
That
so
has been
fascinating.
really interesting with Homer. On the communication side, right?
Wait, I'm gonna hold off on that one in a second. So I have a question about that. So it almost sounds like, because the actions would be the same, just like you would be thoughtful about where to spend the money, how to, use the money, the actions are all the same, but the way that they almost like, I think with the way that they received it, because when you said, oh, it's a donor money, it almost like we received it as something like we feel bad or feel like we feel the shame, where if you it's a for profit, almost like you earned it. And so we want to be responsible. That's so fascinating that the way that it comes in and almost shifts the way that you receive and give it out and what you do with it.
That's right. And it is the same. And it's actually for a nonprofit, in a way, it's better, right? Because people are believing. I'm sorry.
Believing in it because we believed in it, we
A
earned
little
it.
bit of my thought.
Yeah, it takes a
Yeah.
while.
Can you hold on for 1 second? Sorry. Yeah, it's a little bit of a somebody's believing in you, and they're willing to give you money, right? They're willing to say, and it might be as small as somebody, a local person giving you $50. It might be a corporate giving you $1 million, right? But it's still the same. They believe in what you're doing, and they want to try to make a difference in what you're trying to make a difference with, right? So, as a person, for me, right, being involved with something like that has been so rewarding, because you're actually helping people that need help, that are very often not able to get help very easily, right?
Yes.
So that's kind of the message. But it's the same around homeware. It's not just about homelessness, right? Because there's many organizations that focus on homelessness.
Yes.
It's like, what's unique about what you're doing? How are you doing
Uh-huh.
it differently? And how are
Uh-huh.
you doing, and this is from a messaging and marketing standpoint, how are you doing it differently? And how are you doing it in a way that differentiates you from some of these other organizations that might be raising hundreds of millions of dollars, but you don't see them doing very much, right? They have a big bureaucracy or whatever. And so our message at Homeware, what we've come down to, and this is how the whole organization started, is each person that's experiencing homelessness, right, is a unique individual. They all have a story. They all have a reason why they're in that situation. It's not just this block of thousands of people that all have the same thing. They're all human be they're each of them are a human being. They each have kind of something that is a reason why they got there. And when you come from that angle, right, it really hits you because you really start seeing the humanity in those people and not just the fact that they're like the people that you see on the street when you're walking around, right? And so that's kind of where our mess that's how we've built out the whole organization from the beginning, and has completely fed into why we've strategically decided to go in a certain direction at a certain time, right? If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense just by how you described it. I can hear the stories. I can, and it makes I'm like compelled to want to give because you're like this individual, yes, has a story that, it's not just, and I'm more connected and I feel like I'm actually giving to this person because I'm connected to the person versus
That's right.
I give the money to some an organization that I don't know.
And we, I don't want to get too much into our product strategy because I don't know if that's the
No, but
purpose
that's
of the
fascinating. That's
conversation.
great. Did you help them come into that? Did you help them? You're part of that
I
idea.
did. I came on with them quite early. So Homeware was actually started by a very young guy who was still an undergrad in university in San Francisco at the University of San Francisco. And he had moved to San Francisco to go to school, and he saw a lot of homeless people. And he was like, why is this happening? I read in the news there's $200 million going toward homelessness in San Francisco. Like, where is it going? He would walk past people naively and say, hey. And he'd see the same people every day on the street, and he would go up to them and say, hey, does anybody talk to you? Like, are you getting help for, your situation? And more often than not, people would say, no, nobody's ever talked to me. And he's like, how could that be? Like, it's not that difficult for somebody to walk around. You can kind of figure out who's experiencing homelessness, on the street, and nobody's really helping them. So a lot of the money goes to these big money things like building out housing, which is important too. But there was kind of this ground level that help that was missing, or it was expected that the person had to find it or figure it out on their own. So that was kind of how it started. And I got involved from the beginning, and now I'm still on the board, but also advising them. And anyway, I one thing that might be interesting to chat about really quickly, I don't know how much more time we have, is that bringing it back to communication, is being on a board, and board communication is very different than, being an employee at a company or even being a founder, right? And it's very important to have that, if you're on the board or if you're bringing information to the board, to kind of consolidate that down to something very simple that people can kind of get their heads around. Because a board member, typically, I've been more involved just because I've had the time and I'm passionate about what they're doing, and I've been advising them. But usually a board member is just there to kind of gather a very summarized piece of information and make a decision.
Correct. So yeah, have it dialed in and rehearse it, practice it before you go to any board member. And even as a founder, when you're sharing your specific messages, have it concise so people can understand you. I mean, even going out, right? People think maybe as a founder, I have more grace to talk longer, and then they keep talking, and then
That's
it,
right.
people drown you out.
And sometimes that is counterintuitive to what you think, right? Like what we talked about earlier, you think you need to share everything because it's like, oh, look at all this great stuff. But actually, usually less is more,
Right
and
now,
simple is better. Right. And let's face it, in today's society, right, we're just bombarded with bazillions of messages all the time. Like all of us glance at something for a few seconds and then we move on to the next thing, right? You need to catch somebody in that very short, very small window.
So this leads us to our last question, Keith. What would be possible when leaders, founders, board members, professionals start to think about communication not as just a soft skill, but really have intention, purposeful communication where you think about how this is going to translate, how it's going to get repeated, how it's going to get transferred? What is the impact of that?
That's a really good question, right? I think some of it is around being thoughtful before you kind of just blurt something out or just communicate something out, whatever the channel is, whether it's verbal or written or whatever. I think one thing that's really, really important is to not just do that on your own, right? Always have other people that can be a sounding board and listen to what you're saying before you put it out there more broadly. To make sure that it's not going to be misunderstood or whatever. Sometimes that's not always possible. You kind of have to, you're kind of thinking at the moment, but I think like anything else, it's like practice makes perfect, right? So the more that you're out there, the more you're talking about a certain topic or different things, the more you feel comfortable with a certain direction, right?
Would you say a quick question for messaging? Because a lot of times we are still trying to refine it. And I agree with you, the practicing, it just hit me. I mean, is there a percentage? Because yesterday I practiced a lot my messaging, but maybe we can't always get to 100% because we're still refining. Maybe we start to go out to the market, start to talk to people when we're at 75%. What do you think? Like, is it 50, 40, 70?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it depends what you're trying to do, but I think it's always good to get it out there and just kind of see how people react, right?
Yes, but you don't want to go too early.
That's right. I think, one of the things I've talked with other people about, you don't want to be petrified so that you never go out
Never
there.
say
Plenty of
anything.
us have been in that boat, right? But you also don't want to release something too early
Too early.
so that, it's misunderstood. But I do think, you can do that maybe relatively early on a one-on-one basis, right? So you might, depending on what you're trying to do, maybe there's somebody that has subject matter expertise and what you're thinking about doing that you can run it by confidentially just to get their feedback and kind of see if that makes sense. Like we did that a lot. Like when I had my startup and we were considering pitching, we had a number of advisors that had done startups before, and we would share with them, this is how we're going to talk about it. And they would give us almost always, it's like, okay, cut out like 50% of what you're talking about, and take 90% of the words off your slide and stuff like that. But,
That makes sense.
yeah, even me, as a marketer, and that's what I've always done, it's not always easy to do with your own company or for yourself, right? I'm very good at telling other people what they're supposed to do, but when it comes down to me and then I have to think about it, it's a lot harder,
It's so interesting, so hard.
right?
But that's where you said that's where you run it by people that you trust and a select few, and then you can go out to more people. That's a good strategy.
That's right.
I love it. Awesome, Keith. Thank you so much for your time and your expertise. If there's a startup entrepreneur or some entrepreneur that wants to find you and needs your help and counsel, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, I mean, feel free to reach out to me. I think the easiest way would just to be to connect with me on LinkedIn, and then we can message that way. I'm a pretty active user on LinkedIn, and it's usually the easiest way right now to get a hold of me. So yeah, please feel free to do so. And any startups that need advice or just kind of want to talk stuff through, I'd be happy to connect with them.
Thank you so much, Keith.
Thank you, Melinda. It's been awesome to hear. It went fast. That was fun.
It was so fun. Thank you so much. Lots to talk about. So interesting. And thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, take care. And remember, anytime you communicate, communicate what matters so we move together. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye, Keith.
Bye, thanks.
Thanks for tuning in today. If this conversation sparks something for you, if you're thinking, we talk a lot in our organization and things still fall through the cracks, we're not getting the results that we want. I've got something for you that might help. It's called the Accountability Self-Assessment, and it takes less than 60 seconds. In one quick review, you'll get real insights as to why accountability and results are slipping on your team. And you'll walk away with a legacy accountability card. It's a simple one-pager framework to help you and your team move talk to traction. Because the legacy of you and your team is built more than just meetings. It's built on clarity, consistency, and follow through. So grab it today. Go to speakandflow.com or click on the link in the show notes. It's free, fast, and built for busy leaders like you. See you next time. Until then, keep communicating with impact and momentum.